United States v. Evans. Are the parties ready? Okay, we'll hear from the appellant.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Matthew Bernstein, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Potter, I represent the appellant, First Lieutenant Asa Evans. The Army Court erred when it failed to use the proper Brisbane harmless beyond a reasonable doubt test when evidence was admitted in violation of Article 31B.
What was the constitutional error?
Your Honor, in this case, there's the Article 31 rights is obviously a statutory-based protection. And 31 is analogous to the Fifth Amendment for constitutional violations, Your Honor. As this court held in Gardiner, Article 31 violations are held to the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt standard that was set forth in Chapman in the Supreme Court case.
Counsel, are all Article 31B violations constitutional violations in your view?
They're not, Your Honor. I believe that there's a spectrum that this court should look at when determining when an Article 31 violation rises to the level of the harmless beyond reasonable doubt test.
Okay, so then answer my initial question, which is what specifically about the facts of this case put it on that end of the spectrum?
Yes, Your Honor, of course. For three reasons, this court should apply the harmless beyond reasonable doubt test. First, prior to initiating questioning, the Brigade Judge Advocate suspected Lieutenant Evans of misconduct, and new Article 31 should have been read. The second point is the Brigade Judge Advocate, who's a single senior legal advisor to the brigade commander, intentionally circumvented Article 31 rights. And third, the course of nature of the questioning in this case.
How did they circumvent it?
Your Honor,
is this a sham or some sort of low conduct on the part of the government? What are you talking about?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, the circumvention of Article 31 was based on the Brigade Judge Advocate's actions to ask Lieutenant Evans' senior raider, the S3, to work at his behest to get this incriminating statement from Lieutenant Evans without reading Article 31. In this case, the Brigade Judge Advocate knew Lieutenant Evans was represented by counsel.
They talked to the counsel, right? And the counsel said he'll be right over, he's making a statement. I mean, I'm not sure how that cuts in your favor.
Your Honor, let me see if I can answer that question properly, Your Honor. He did not know that Lieutenant Evans was represented by counsel, but just based purely upon knowing he's represented by counsel does not allow the government to circumvent Article 31 in getting a statement.
I mean, so far, I don't think anyone would disagree that you've laid out a good case as to the fact that Article 31 rights should have been given, right? But that doesn't answer the different question as to why the fact that they weren't given makes it a constitutional violation in this case.
Your Honor,
Do you agree that for harmless beyond reasonable doubt to apply that there needs to be a constitutional violation, or do you have a different argument?
I believe for a harmless beyond reasonable doubt to apply, there's a spectrum, which I discussed, that based on the nature of the questioning and the nature of the 31 violation, and I think that is where this court should look towards to determine what standard should be used, if it should be the prejudice analysis or the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt analysis.
I'm a little puzzled here. As Judge Ryan pointed out, wasn't defense counsel involved in this?
He was, Your Honor, defense counsel.
On the one hand, you say the brigade judge advocate didn't know he was represented by counsel. Well, anybody in the Army who's a judge advocate knows when counsel attaches. But beyond that, it seems like he's not making a proffer because there's no trial, but he's saying, here's my teeth. And the guy's saying, okay, well, where'd this come from? And he said, well, I had it done in Afghanistan, and here's my teeth. And what's on here that says it's your teeth in Afghanistan? Well, also, I'll give you a piece of paper that says it's my teeth in Afghanistan. Is that even an interrogation? Does Article 31 even apply to this exchange?
Yes, Your Honor, it does apply because in this case, the Brigade Judge Advocate needed a memorandum for record to link Lieutenant Evans to submitting that x-ray, and that was the basis of the false official statement. For the false official statement specification, there had to be an actual statement that was false. And in this case, the Brigade Judge Advocate knew that he needed an objective chain of custody to authenticate that Lieutenant Evans submitted the x-ray as part of rebuttal matter. So the actual submission of the x-ray was the statement, and the Brigade Judge Advocate didn't know how that statement was submitted. So he needed that MFR to link Lieutenant Evans to it. So by getting the memorandum for record without being read as Article 31 rights, he incriminated himself.
Was the constitutional basis argued or discussed at all at the lower court? Let's go to the court-martial first. I mean, he made an Article 31 motion. Did he argue constitutional issues at that point?
Miranda and the Fifth Amendment were mentioned in the motion at the lower court, Your Honor, but it was mainly based on an Article 31 violation was the argument at the lower court.
Then, from our perspective, how are we supposed to know when there is a constitutional basis as applied as opposed to a strictly statutory basis? I mean, what should we be looking for? And I know you gave your three reasons, but I'm talking more generally.
Well, Your Honor, I think to use the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt test should be based on the totality of the circumstances. And some of the factors that this court should consider when determining what test to use is, was the accused suspected of misconduct prior to being questioned? What was the intent of the questioner before he questioned that person?
But those are the typical things you look at in the Article 31 case.
Those are the factors that determine whether Article 31 warnings are required, even, right?
Yes, Your Honor, they are. But I think in this case, it's important to look at the egregious nature of the government's actions in this case by circumventing Lieutenant Evans' 31 rights to link him to an x-ray to go for trial, to court-martial him. In this case, the Brigade Judge Advocate knew Lieutenant Evans was suspected of misconduct at that point. And he knew the only way to link him, to get him on the hook, so to say, is what he stated in his testimony, was to get an MFR linking him. And that conduct by circumventing 31 to get that statement, the incriminating statement, is what makes this case egregious. And that's why the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt test should be used.
Counsel, in your view, was this a custodial interrogation?
Not a custodial interrogation in the sense of Miranda, Your Honor. Although here under 31...
Under Miranda, do you need a custodial interrogation situation?
That's kind of, my understanding, Your Honor, is custodial interrogation is kind of the basis for Miranda and the Fifth Amendment. But
okay, so you're saying custodial interrogation is the basis for Miranda. You're then saying this was not custodial interrogation. Doesn't that then mean that this is not a violation that has constitutional implications? That it instead was strictly statutory violation of Article 31b?
Let me clarify my point, if I can.
Certainly.
I think this is analogous to a custodial interrogation because here you have Lieutenant Evans, a senior raider, a major, and his supervisor being told by an attorney to pull him into a conference room to get an incriminating statement. The course of nature of this questioning was purely to gather evidence to use against Lieutenant Evans. So although not custodial interrogation, maybe the sense of a Miranda case, I think it's analogous here to how the Brigade Judge Advocate acted in this case by making a coercive environment surrounding the questioning.
Have we ever taken that totality of the circumstances approach before?
Not with regards to Article 31, Your Honor, but by looking at Brisbane, which to the course of nature environment there, Brisbane, he was ordered by his command to go see the family advocacy counselor. And when he went to go see that counselor, he provided incriminating statements. Similar to the facts here where the S3, Lieutenant Evans, senior raider, ordered him into a conference room, provided him an incriminating statement, and told him to sign it. And in Brisbane, this court used the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt test. And in Brisbane, this court also found that the family advocacy counselor knew prior to questioning Brisbane, suspected him of misconduct. She was working with law enforcement, and she knew of the allegations. And she specifically stated that the reason for her interview was to decide if they had sufficient evidence to proceed with the case. It's exactly the same here, Your Honor.
So if this court were not to adopt a brand new rule of totality of the circumstances, and if this court were to find that there was no custodial interrogation, where would that leave you?
To go back to my spectrum analysis, Your Honor, I think it brings us to the far end of the spectrum where Brisbane was, where in Brisbane, the questioner suspected the accused of misconduct. Same thing here. Here, the S3 and the brigade chief advocate suspected Lieutenant Evans of misconduct.
But the whole question in Brisbane, right, was whether or not, because she knew that and suspected him, she was supposed to give Article 31 warnings, right? And so, similarly, the argument that you're making here, you know, is persuasive to the point that the person should have given Article 31 warnings, but it doesn't answer the other point that we're all trying to get you to answer, which is what is more? What more is there that makes it into anything other than just a violation of Article 31? Brisbane, that was the point in Brisbane, right? Was she a person that should have given warnings?
Right, Your Honor, in that case, the civilian, the question was, should 31 have been given? But then this court did go on further and state that it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt that questioning that occurred and the statements that were given because of later taken statements that were properly done with Article 31. But this court found that the statements provided to the civilian was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
I mean, undoubtedly, through our cases, I mean, there's two different standards that are written without a great deal of explanation as to why, right? So
yes, Your Honor.
We've created confusion.
I would submit to the court, Your Honor, there is a bit of confusion out there of which standard applies in 31 violation cases. And
so wouldn't it be better for us to just clear that up?
It would, Your Honor, and the defense position would be to clear it up in the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt realm. I think this court can assume. But yes, Your Honor, a clear standard would be beneficial to all military justice practitioners in Article 31 cases. But Article 31 obviously is that statutory basis, and which is analogous to the constitutional basis with the Fifth Amendment. And the reasons behind 31 were actually discussed by the Supreme Court in the Miranda opinion. Violations of Article 31 should be to that higher standard, to the harmless beyond a reasonable doubt test. And if this court determines that there maybe is a different standard, I think it should this court should look at the nature of the questioning to determine harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And in this case, it was egregious on behalf of the government. You had a lawyer acting as a prosecutor to get evidence to use against an accused after he suspected him of misconduct. I think that's an important part for this court to understand, or this court to, for me to tell this court, is that Lieutenant Evans was suspected of misconduct, and the circumvention of Article 31 was key in this case. And without the MFR, the government didn't have a case for that false official statement specification.
Counsel, based on the scope of the issue presented, if this court were to decide that the CARE test was the proper test to apply, do we need to engage in any additional weighing, finding of prejudice, or do we simply adopt the analysis performed by the CCA?
Your Honor, I think this court should do their own analysis. Because under
now, why is that based on the scope of issue presented? It doesn't refer to whether the court below properly conducted its prejudice analysis. It simply says that the wrong test was applied.
Yes, Your Honor. If this court determines that CUR was the proper test that should have been used in this case, then I agree, Your Honor. I understand. Based on the scope of the issue that was presented in this case. However, I would just like to make a quick point about the CUR test and how he was prejudiced in this case. the MFR that was used in this case was, excuse me, Your Honor, without the MFR in this case, there was no statement. Without a statement, there's no false official statement. The government's case was weak. It was not strong here with regards to the false official statement.
They dismissed the false official statement with respect to the MFR, didn't they?
That is correct, Your Honor, they did. But based on the only remaining evidence, there's no admissible evidence that linked Lieutenant Evans to submitting the X-ray to make it a false official statement.
Thank you.
Any questions from the court? I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Ms. Graham, the court will now hear from the government.
Judge Erdman, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Linda Chavez, and along with Major Stephen Collins, we represent the government in this matter. The Kerr prejudice test was the proper test because the error they found was of a non-constitutional nature. Different rights can be implicated during any interrogation, Article 31, Miranda, and the Fifth Amendment. And each right is treated separately with its own independent analysis, and its own standard of prejudice.
Well, isn't Kerr not so much a standard or a test, but a list of factors that provide guidance as to whether it falls in the constitutional or the statutory end of the spectrum?
That is a list of factors that is applied when there is a non-constitutional error, Your Honor, and the Brisbane harmless beyond a reasonable doubt test is the error is applied when the error is constitutional.
So where do we say that? Where do we say that?
Where do you say that the...
Where did we say that? Where did we make that distinction? Are you citing Gilbert?
Gilbert, yes, sir.
Okay. Okay.
Are you saying that that's what we should say?
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because if we'd said that, right, then we wouldn't be here.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. But that's the divide or the line that this court has taken without explicitly saying so. With Article 31 cases like Jones, Cohen, and Swift, you have taken the non-constitutional approach, and when there has been a violation, the Kerr prejudice test has been applied. And that's just strictly dealing with a questioner in the military and whether or not rights warnings were required. Now, regarding the Brisbane harmless beyond a reasonable doubt test, that was a separate issue that was dealing with the subsequent statement. Initially, as this court stated before, that the first part of that test, that first part of that case, was whether or not that family advocacy worker was subject to the code. So there was the analysis about that. So once that was determined that their Article 31 rights should have been read, then the second part was determining the voluntariness of that subsequent statement. And that's per the Fifth Amendment, which is its own separate analysis given the totality of the circumstances. And that's different from Miranda, which is triggered when there's a custodial interrogation. So there's the three different versions or three different rights that apply in different circumstances.
Okay, so, why does this fall in the non-constitutional end?
Because the appellant in this case, Your Honor, was not in custody triggering Miranda. And the government's position...
He's hauled in there by his supervisor and told to sign some.
There was prior coordination with his defense counsel, so it's a reasonable inference that he knew that this meeting was coming and the purpose of the meeting through his defense counsel's coordination with the BJ and ultimately the S3, Your Honor. And the custody issue was not raised at trial. There's no facts or findings.
Well, whether he was in custody or not... 31 is designed to take care of the peculiar circumstances of the armed forces, as we all know. And one of those peculiar circumstances is being hauled into a room by your supervisor and told to sign something. Now, doesn't that have constitutional implications?
Not in this case, Your Honor.
Why?
The test for whether somebody's in custody is, what were the
circumstances? Well, it's more than simple custody. Are you saying unless he's in custody, it's not constitutional?
Yes.
Ipso facto?
There's two things that require any type of warnings as far as custody is concerned under Miranda. That's they're in custody and there's an interrogation. So in this case, there was not an interrogation. It was a simple, is this what you submitted for your rebuttal? Yes. And that was the extent of it.
Okay. It's not an interrogation.
It's not an interrogation, Your Honor.
Because why? Because he showed up with the teeth? I mean, you know, this whole thing is very strange.
Yes.
Yeah. But he proffered the teeth. And then somehow he signed a piece of paper saying the teeth were his teeth and they were taken in Afghanistan.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. And then the government used that as base for an Article 107 charge. Okay, well, I mean, it just seems to me that if you're badgered by your supervisor into signing something and then the government turns around and charges you with it, there's an element of coercion present.
That by itself is not enough.
That by itself is not enough. I'm sure the government would like us to say that. Thank you.
So, counsel, you're saying that there are three different versions here. Article 31, Constitution, and Miranda?
Yes, Your Honor.
So where are you drawing the line between constitutional implications of such a situation and the Miranda?
The line is where Gilbert drew the line, Your Honor, where it's just a simple questioning from somebody subject to the code and the Jones analysis on the totality of the circumstances and whether that questioner was acting in a law enforcement or disciplinary capacity. And then the second part of that test, where a reasonable man in the suspect's position would consider the questioner to be acting in an official law enforcement capacity. That's the non-constitutional area.
That's Article 31.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And what makes it constitutional?
It is not constitutional, Your Honor.
No.
Okay, but go to the next level. Yeah. Go to the constitutional.
The next level is when you're in actual custody. Either you're in a police station or your freedom of movement is denied in a significant way.
That sounds like Miranda.
Yeah, that sounds like Miranda. What's the intermediate one that's constitutional?
There's the Article 31, non-custodial. Non-custodial Article 31, which is this case, which is Gilbreth, which is Swift. That's non-constitutional Article 31.
I thought you responded that there were three.
Yes.
So there's Miranda, which is custodial.
Yes, correct.
Okay, what's the one in the middle?
That is the middle, Your Honor.
Well, what's
the bottom of
I've lost me totally.
So, for example, let's say someone's not in custody, right, and they're not being questioned by someone who's subject to the code, so Article 31 doesn't apply. But they're beaten about the head until they give a confession. That would be just a straight-up constitutional violation.
Yes, that's the Fifth Amendment voluntariness violation, Your Honor.
I mean, you don't disagree that there could be an Article 31 violation that also could be a constitutional violation.
If there's a failure to warn and it's actually coerced, like they're threatened or there's an undue influence, in that situation, yes, it would merge together and there would be a constitutional violation in that circumstance when it's something more, which is...
Well, and isn't that what we've got here?
Here? No.
Yeah. Yeah. You got Article 31. And you got coercion by the presence of the supervisor saying, sign this, Lieutenant.
Given the circumstances in this case, with the prior coordination between his defense counsel, the BJA, and the S3, there's no...
Basically, what you're saying is this was a defense-requested thing.
Yes, it was part of...
Proffering the teeth.
And it was part of appellant submitting his rebuttal matters, which he submitted prior to meeting with the S3. This wasn't something that...
Was this in the context of a court-martial, or was this in the context of an administrative investigation or 15-6?
It was
the latter, wasn't it?
It was a 15-6, Your Honor, yes.
Right. Okay, well, okay.
Do you agree that it would be a different case if there had been no coordination with the defense counsel, or if, for example, the appellant in this case was a lance corporal being ordered into a room? And I'm just trying to test it. It can't just be that, because it is intended to protect against the inherently, the inherent coercive nature of being in the military and being, subject to the orders of your superiors. So, I hope you're not suggesting that there could never be considered coercive.
No, especially since the presumption even exists in the first place that somebody in the chain of command is questioning, there's a presumption that it is for disciplinary purposes. So I'm not arguing that we should get away from that. That should always exist. But in this instance, if there was no prior coordination with his defense counsel, then we have a separate issue regarding his invocation of counsel and being represented by counsel. So that's a whole separate constitutional error regarding the rights of counsel and approaching somebody after they have invoked. right to counsel. So that's separate and falls outside the realm of Article 31 for that particular issue. But regarding the pulling somebody into the office, that's, I would recommend that this court has a line of cases regarding the same exact situation, like Gilbreth, like Swift, Cohen, Good, and Jones, where it's the same situation, somebody getting pulled into a room, somebody being questioned, and it's just a matter of looking at all the circumstances behind the actual interrogation, whether somebody's acting in a law enforcement or disciplinary capacity, and whether that person who's being questioned is would consider the question to be for official law enforcement purposes.
And you're saying that's not this case? Or is this is that this case?
That is this case. The Jones situation is this case.
Okay. Now, going back to where I was 5 minutes ago, can you explain what the constitutional but non-Miranda hunk of this is?
Non-constitutional.
No, the Constitution. Unless I misunderstood you. You said you had 31, you had constitutional, and you had Miranda.
Correct.
Well, what's the middle one? You've never answered that question.
Middle one is what we spoke about earlier, where there's a Article 31, but there's a voluntariness issue. And there's a coerced confession or admission. So, and because there's certain circumstances where Article 31 and Miranda can be complied with, but then
you keep dragging in Miranda, and you posited something in the middle, and I still am trying to figure out what that is.
Let me see if I can take a crack at this. We know what the requirements are for Article 31 rights. All right, these are statutory; they're over here. We know that Miranda is triggered by a custodial interrogation, and we understand those two. You gave us three different bases. One being Article 31, one being a constitutional, and the other being Miranda. What we're trying to figure out is, what does this middle one, this constitutional one, comprise of?
So that can come in a couple of different situations. One is the situation in Brisbane, where you're looking at or analyzing the second statement that's given when the first statement was unwarned. So that's the voluntariness as far as the second statement and whether that first statement made them give that second statement. And
so can we categorize that as a Fifth Amendment voluntariness situation?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. You're looking at the youth of the accused, his lack of education or low intelligence.
Anything else besides the Fifth Amendment voluntariness?
No.
Okay, so then, let me see if I can sum this up. From the government's perspective, we have these three categories. And we have the non-constitutional violation for Article 31, but for the constitutional and Miranda, we have the constitutional violation, and we apply that standard.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Counsel, I have a question. Didn't Article 31 precede Miranda by many, many years? So was it reasonable, I guess, to assume that the drafters of Article 31 could not possibly have been thinking about Miranda in 1950?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
That's reasonable.
And so when did we, if you know, when did we kind of infuse Miranda into the requirements for the analysis of Article 31? Do you know?
I don't believe this court has done that, Your Honor.
All right. I don't think they have either, but I was wondering.
In the opinion in Swift, there was the discussion about the two different rights and where Article 31 came from, mm-hmm. Like you discussed. And Article 31 was considered a statutory enactment, not a constitutional adjudication. And Miranda was a product of constitutional adjudication. And that was citing the Dickerson Supreme Court case. So there's always been that distinction as far as where the rights come from and where they're triggered, but in this court's opinions regarding Brisbane and Gardiner and Gilbreth and Swift, there has been that divide, but it just hasn't been explicit, and that's why we're here, and we're just asking that you affirmatively address where the situations where one case, the Kerr test, like in Gilbreth, would apply versus Brisbane, the voluntariness of Fifth Amendment, or the Miranda issue would apply in that situation. So So you have always done, this court has always had that distinction, just without explicitly saying so. Any questions?
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
Members of the court, I'd just like to clarify a couple comments that were made by the government. This was not a coordinated effort between the defense counsel and the Brigade Judge Advocate. There was discussion, but the Brigade Judge Advocate never received this MFR from the defense counsel, and there was confusion on the record of how the MFR even came into existence. The S3 said the BJA gave it to him, and that's at the Joint Appendix at 19, and then further down at Joint Appendix 49, the BJA says he has no idea how the MFR came into existence.
Now, okay, that's my question. You know, that's why I'm going back saying, was this an interrogation at all if defense counsel was involved? Now, you're saying, well, defense counsel didn't draft this thing. Okay, defense counsel didn't draft this thing. But was defense counsel on notice that some exchange like this was going to take place with his client?
No, Your Honor. There was discussions previously.
Well, what did those discussions consist of? Or is that not on the record?
It is, Your Honor. And at the Joint Appendix 33, the Brigade Judge Advocate discusses what he discussed with defense counsel.
And what did he say?
If we want an MFR from your client or a statement admitting that he submitted this.
Okay, well, you know, the defense put in the teeth, right? And, you know,
Your Honor, it's unknown how the X-ray was submitted, and that's why the MFR was required.
The X-ray was the appellant's, right?
It had the appellant's name on it. Yes,
it had the appellant's name on it, and was, I keep saying proffered. Proffered is a long term. I can't think of another term. It came from the appellant.
Without the MFR, it is unknown how it appeared on the Brigade Judge Advocate's desk as a rebuttal matter.
Oh, you mean the teeth just mysteriously showed up?
Yes, Your Honor, because that's why the MFR was required, and that's why the Brigade Judge Advocate knew he...
Wait a minute. Okay, so the teeth mysteriously showed up, and then the Brigade Judge Advocate, on whose desk they showed up, called the defense counsel and said, what are these teeth doing here? And the defense counsel said, well, they're my client's teeth, and they were taken in Afghanistan. Or whatever he said. I don't know. But what I'm trying to get at is the depth of defense counsel's involvement in this. I mean, if the appellant went in there saying, well, you know, I got to do this because my defense counsel agreed with the BJA to do this. Well, then, you know, it's not even an interrogation. Where are we here?
Your Honor, there was no, it's unknown from the record that there was any direct coordination with the defense counsel to get this MFR.
Oh, okay.
Defense counsel Major J.R.?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, I mean, this whole thing is addressed on pages 2 and 3 of the Army's slip opinion, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, the discussions back and forth are discussed. But it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't coordinated effort. And then if it was coordinated effort, then it would be more clear on the record how the MFR came into existence. You have both parties who knew about the MFR saying the other one gave it to them. So it was not a coordinated effort. And
well, it says Major J.R. agreed that appellant would provide a sworn statement but later advised the BJA that it was going to be an MFR.
That's what was discussed with the BJA, Your Honor, but it's unclear from the record. And the BJA even states he doesn't know how the MFR came into existence. So just because those statements were made, it doesn't mean that that's actually what happened down the road because it was going to incriminate his client.
Major J.R., I'm quoting from the slip opinion, Major J.R. advised the BJA that appellant would execute a sworn statement delivered to the brigade.
But that's not what happened in this case, Your Honor.
Instead of issuing a sworn statement, he issued an MFR. But, I mean, that defense counsel is pretty deep into this, isn't he?
Yes, Your Honor, but there still was a 31 violation in this case.
And how? If this is all set up between the defense and the government, how is there a 31 violation at all? How is this an interrogation at all?
Because it's unclear from the record. It's unknown if it was 100% coordinated of where the MFR came from.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure whether it needs to be clear from the record that it was 100% coordinated, but defense counsel was obviously involved in this. I mean, that's okay. I've made my... Your point is that the record is unclear.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Chief Judge, I realize I'm out of
time. Counsel, I have a question for you. Do you agree with the three categories that the government provided as to potential basis for this case? Article 31, the Fifth Amendment, voluntariness, constitutional violation, or a Miranda violation?
Your Honor, I think the middle one is what would happen in this case, the constitutional violation with the failure to warn coercion.
I think that the Chief Judge's question is, do you agree that those are the three categories, not which category do you think your case falls into?
Thank you, Your Honor, for helping me clarify that. I believe there are those three categories that do exist, but I believe in this case, if I may, Your Honor, this falls into the middle category, failure to warn and coercion, which the government stated was constitutional. And here there was a violation, and that's why Brisbane and harm's beyond a reasonable doubt test should be implied.
But you're not arguing Miranda.
I think it's analogous, or it could be analogous to Miranda, Your Honor. But I think the coercive aspect of this case is important.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The Court thanks Counsel for both parties, and we will be in recess until 10:20.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 10:20.